Our first reading today is from the Reverend Rebecca Parker. She preached here several years ago, and she's been the president of our school for the ministry, Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley. Rebecca Parker co-authored A House for Hope with the Reverend John Burens, and Burens serves our church in Needham, Massachusetts. He has been a past president of the Unitarian Universalist Association and also of Amnesty International. This reading is from their book, A House for Hope.
Evil is not mysterious, not insignificant, and not rare. It is ordinary, life-destroying, and pervasive. It cannot be confined to evildoers and enemies whose destruction will please God and free us. Calmness in the face of evil comes to those who, rather than being frantic to purge it, concentrate their attention on recognizing and resisting its habits. Salvation manifests in wisdom, persistence, in not allowing evil to operate in its habitual patterns.
Albert Camus was a French philosopher who grew up dirt poor in Algiers. This is an excerpt taken from his essay, Return to Tipasa. He grew up poor, but he knew abundance. Tipasa is the ancient Roman city. It was a Phoenician port. It is on the coast of North Africa, about 70 kilometers from his hometown. And that's where he grew up before the Second World War. After the war, he returned several times to his homeland and to the ruins that were there. These ruins were washed in sunlight, as he remembered from his youth, and on the edge of the sea and the edge of the sky. He went back after the war searching for something lost to him. After seeing the horrors in Europe, on his return trip, he discovered what he had been searching for.
I have again left Tipasa. I have returned to Europe and its struggles. But the memory of that day still uplifts me and helps me to welcome equally what delights and what crushes. In the difficult hour we are living, what else can I desire than to exclude nothing and to learn how to braid with white thread and black thread a single cord stretched to the breaking point? In everything I have done or said up to now, I seem to recognize these two forces, even when they work at cross purposes. I have not been able to disown the light into which I was born, and yet I have not wanted to reject the servitudes of this time. It would be too easy to contrast here with the sweet name of Tipasa other more sonorous and crueler names. For men of today, there is an inner way, which I know well from having taken it in both directions, leading from the spiritual hilltops to the capitals of crime. And doubtless, one can always rest, fall asleep on the hilltop or bored with crime. But if one foregoes a part of what is, one must forego being oneself. One must forego living or loving otherwise than by proxy. There is thus a will to live without rejecting anything of life, which is the virtue I honor most in this world. From time to time, at least, it is true that I should have liked to have practiced it, inasmuch as few epochs require as much as ours, that one should be equal to the best as to the worst. I should like, indeed, to shirk nothing and to keep faithfully a double memory. Yes, there is beauty, and there are the humiliated. Whatever may be the difficulties of the undertaking, I should like never to be unfaithful either to one or to the others.
My life feels very full these days with even with an empty nest and with work, with hospice, and I work. And sometimes I do feel the pull of the sorrow in the world and the beauty. I guess always, for joy and woe are woven fine. But this spring, I have the distinct pleasure of co-facilitating a class on the House for Hope with Reverend Eric Meter and a small group of dedicated folks who join us week after week. The authors of the book have used the metaphor of a house to let us go back and do a little theological engagement with our history, engagement with classical chapters of theology that you might get in a seminary. The premise of the book is that effective work for social change requires people of faith who are theologically literate and engaged. We're living in a world where the religious fundamentalists promote religious frameworks that put the global community, its diverse peoples, and our ecological systems at risk. And at the core are competing responses to classic questions of theology. And 2 weeks ago, we heard Reverend Kelly Flood speaking on these different frameworks for seeing. Progressive theology has always offered alternative perspectives on the age-old themes. Their book is a primer in theological literacy because we have some homework to do. We have a strong record for social justice, and it would be helpful for us as we're engaging in the community to know our trajectory and the stories that have informed our forebears. We get those every week here, but sometimes to engage them personally takes us deeper into our own self. And often it's like doing excavation work, and we see what's in the ruins there and discover there are some delights to be found too. I've noticed that in addition to articulating thoughts and coming up against questions, there seems to be a healing thread, a reconciling thread that's moving through the class as people are discovering things they didn't know about our tradition and questioning also. So just as a quick overview, we have the metaphor of the garden. This would be eschatology from the Greek word eschaton, or end or final days. And this is the theological category that deals with ultimate end of life on earth, or final things. This would include our relationship to the earth, stewardship, sustainability, and just economic systems. The sheltering walls of their theological house for hope is the way that we do church. You may think of interdependency or covenant and recognize we do know these. We do know this. A foreign word like ecclesiology doesn't mean we're not familiar with this. Here, this is the way, how do we hold ourselves accountable to each other? And we look at the various ministries we have in a church. Our ministry to our youngest and our families, our pastoral ministries, our ministry of beauty, music, our ministry of social justice and change. The floors are the foundation. So this week, we're going to be looking at concepts of God. And our roof is what protects and shelters. And that was a discussion on soteriology. Soter is from the Greek word that means preservation or release or salvation. It's a loaded word for many of us here. So I want to do a little translation, a little bit, for the basics. There's a traditional story of evil and salvation in the Bible, and it goes something like this. Adam and Eve were in the garden, and evil entered the world. There was sin of disobedience, and they received punishment and exile from the garden. Disasters followed, and God finally intervened by sending Jesus, his son, to die on the cross for us. Those who accept him receive eternal life, and those who don't suffer eternal punishment. Evil is huge. We use the word devil, demons, big, like Voldemort, to describe evil in the world. And we may say, I don't believe that. But underneath every no, there's a deeper yes. So what do we believe? Well, Rebecca Parker states that there are liberal interpretations of what needs to be saved. Dating back to the early Christian church, sin was not looked at so much as disobedience, but actions that damage or destroy the life-giving relationships of love and justice in human affairs. How does progressive religion offer salvation, healing, reconciliation from that which is evil, unjust, or harms life? Parker says we need to be saved from the consequences of sin and not God's anger. Lost my place. And she identifies that salvation comes through the power of life, goodness, present within us and around us. An alternative definition of evil is that of one that exploits the lives of others to benefit others. Evil has many accomplices, things that deaden life, the life force in people. These can be drugs, these can be alcohol, this can be poverty. Economic systems of white privilege, hunger, homelessness, troubled ecosystems. She reminds us, evil is not mysterious, not insignificant, and not rare. It's ordinary, life-destroying, and pervasive. And salvation manifests in wisdom, persistence, and in not allowing evil to function in habitual patterns. How do we stay faithful to the humiliated and the dispossessed in our world? How do we respond with wisdom and persistence? And how do we respond to that which threatens, damages, and oppresses? We respond by touching what makes us alive. We respond through our social justice ministries of the church. We respond by being who we are at our deepest core. I have to tell you, I was drawn to Camus by a quote. He said, in the depths of winter, I finally discovered that within me there lay an invincible summer. And that spoke of such hopefulness to me. And I tried it on, wondering if I had that kind of resilience, that kind of hopefulness in me. I tried it with, in my work, I meet people on the continuum of many places of resistance and acceptance to their dying or their death. And my prayer to myself privately for them often is, may you find that place of resilience and summer. Tipasa resonates with my life because I am at a time in my life, maybe I've always been reflective, of looking back over the years and remembering. I have an affinity for ruins and places that speak of ages gone past. And it's a beautiful metaphor for life. And looking deep. From the Camus reading this morning, he makes the point that there is beauty in the world and we need to experience more of it. There is also life-denying injustice, and his intention is to be aware of both, living in the tension of both, and for him this is integrity. We need beauty to live well. We need it for renewal so that we can do the work of justice. Where are the places in your life where you glimpse freedom, or that you've experienced it, where you felt your most authentic self? Camus considered himself an atheist, but later he came to tout the idea that the absence of religious belief can simultaneously be accompanied by a longing for salvation and meaning. This line of thinking presented a paradox and became a major thread in defining the idea of absurdism in his writings. I look at this House for Hope, reflections from this spiritual home. We witness to beauty. We lift up the sorrow in our lives. We hold ourselves accountable to those within our walls and those beyond. And we are working to transform our world. Think of bread and Friday dinners at Faith Mission, our district assemblies, our ecumenical services where we invite the community in to worship together with us. We have sustainability group. We have a group for those that are going through hard times. We have a ministry to our seniors and the school for young children. We join together with other congregations in Columbus to change our city. Havel, Vaclav Havel writes, "Hope is a state of mind, not of the world. Hope in this deep, powerful sense is not the same as joy that things are going well, or willingness to invest in enterprises that are obviously heading for success, but rather an ability to work for something because it is good. We pass through the thresholds of this house for hope. We gather under its rafters and within these sheltering walls so that we can take our light out into the world. Engaging and re-engaging, returning to beauty, opening ourselves to the pain in our lives, and the joy, deepening in spirit and determination, leaving these walls to do the work of justice outside of these walls, returning together to pause in our silence, the silence that undergirds our living together. This sustaining community is a house for hope, working boldly for healing, renewal, and social transformation."